this anyway, just for kicks. Sam.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Tales from the Air podcast. Happy you're joining us today. It is February 1st. I'm recording on February 1st, and you'll understand why here in a second. We're switching gears today, folks. The initial plan was to talk about the airport experience once you've gone through security. And in light of the events outside Washington, D.C. on Wednesday night and then the crash last night in Northeast Philadelphia with the medical transport flight, I just didn't seem appropriate to address those issues. So I wanted to kind of dig in a little bit more so on the collision that occurred outside Washington. Still, you know, a lot in flux with what happened in Philadelphia last night. So going to hold off on that a little bit, but we're going to dig into that today. First and foremost, condolences and thoughts and prayers go out to the families that that lost loved ones in Wednesday night's collision, as well as last night as well. You can never prepare yourself for something like that when that occurs to a loved one, a friend. Just it's horrific. And it's why these events monopolize the news cycle because they are so tragic. It happens so quickly and is just awful. The plane crash last night in Northeast Philadelphia also killed one person on the ground as of now. And 19 were injured. Not sure the extent of those injuries, but want to mention that as well. So thoughts and prayers go out to all those families impacted and who are grieving today, the event Wednesday night and also last night. As I said, I'm going to be really focusing this podcast on the events that happened Wednesday night. And I'm going to break down the podcast in a few segments. I want to give a little perspective and history on the DC airspace and flying into Reagan National Airport, Washington Reagan National Airport. I want to talk a little bit about the investigation. And then finally, just kind of set a few items straight based on some things I've heard over the last couple of days from news media and whatnot that I want to kind of correct that a little bit, that like level set things, I guess would be a better way to put it. So with that, we'll kind of get started with talking about the DC airspace and Reagan National Airport. So if you've never traveled into Washington by airplane, I hope this gives you a little sense of what you encounter traveling in, and understand with Reagan National being so close to the Pentagon and so close to Capitol Hill and the White House and all that. There's so much that goes into security. There's so much that goes into military operations and whatnot. And the airspace around Washington looked much different pre-9/11 than it has post-9/11. And there's been a lot more military aircraft patrolling the skies over Washington, and that includes the routes along the Potomac River. In addition to that, you have seen just with different events, different security levels adjusting and changing. So you may see those flights increase, decrease over time. So want to give you just a little perspective on that. Again, if you've not traveled to Washington, there are three airports that really make up that area. The closest to Washington is Ronald Reagan National Airport. That airport and Dulles Airport make up the Metropolitan Washington Airport Authority. You have a third airport, Baltimore-Washington International, which is just south of Baltimore. And it is also a very popular airport, heavily used by not only those in the Baltimore area, but those in the northern suburbs of Washington will travel to Baltimore. So to give you a sense of distance from, and I'm going to use Capitol Hill as our center point, it's less than 4 miles from Ronald Reagan National Airport to Capitol Hill. It's a very short distance. Dulles Airport is in Virginia. It is west of Washington, and it is 26 miles from Capitol Hill. Recently, and I should have researched the exact date, somewhat recently, in the last couple of years, I think, the Metro Rail has added a line taking you out, connecting Dulles Airport to the other lines, so you can travel by rail. Now, that wasn't always the case. It was a little bit more challenging to get out there, a little more expensive to get out to Dulles from Washington, especially if you encountered traffic or weather, could add a little time. Then finally, Baltimore, BWI, is 32 miles from Capitol Hill. So it gives you a little perspective. When Dulles Airport was first constructed, the idea was that Reagan, at the time Washington National Airport, would close to commercial air traffic, and Dulles would pick up all of that traffic. But because of its proximity to Capitol Hill and just different offices in Washington, it's become even more popular because you can land at Reagan National and get to your destination within the Washington area pretty close, or pretty soon rather. It's not a bad commute. Like Dulles, you can take the Metro Rail as well from the airport into different lines. I believe that's the yellow and blue line that run along that path from the airport. At any rate, point being, it is a very popular airport. It sits right along the Potomac River, and is used heavily throughout the week. In fact, I'll get to a stat here in a minute of just how frequent it's used. One thing I want to mention, I'm going to throw a lot of stats out here today, and I apologize for that, kind of. I just think it's important. These are things that maybe people have heard, maybe you've heard from different sources, but it's not been all in one place, and I think it is interesting, especially if you're not a frequent traveler to the Washington area. The thing that's really interesting, when Dulles was built, there were some caps put on travel out of Washington National directly. That has been adjusted over time. As of right now, direct flights can only travel 1,250 miles from Washington National. And there are exceptions that are given, but part of that is due to the type of aircraft that come into Washington National limiting the size of the aircraft that come in. Again, there are some exceptions given, but that gives you a little sense of that perimeter, and that's what they call it, perimeter of 1,250 miles. So let's talk a little bit about that approach. I mentioned before that you have the airport, specifically the runways are just on adjacent to the Potomac River, and you come in one of two ways. You come in from the north, which is called the river visual approach. And I will tell you, if you're sitting on the left side of the aircraft on that arrival, it is probably one of the more scenic landings you will ever have coming in from the north. And then taking off to the north, sitting on the right side of the plane. But I think you get a much better sense when you're landing versus taking off. And truly beautiful. On the left side of the plane, as you're arriving, as you're landing at Reagan National, you see the Washington Monument, the Kennedy Center, Capitol Hill, the White House, the Jefferson Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial. It is truly stunning as you're coming in. It would rate probably tied for me as number one of the most scenic arrivals. I really love the approach into Seattle with the mountains. And then as you come in to seeing the entire city is really beautiful as well. And then on a clear day, when you have those in Seattle, as you're coming in, you get just a great shot of Mount Rainier as you're coming into the airfield. So at any rate, that's the northern approach. The approach that was taken Wednesday night by the American Airlines flight took a southern approach, which is the Mount Vernon approach coming in from the south. And that is one that I've probably taken the southern approach probably 3-1 on my approaches into Reagan National Airport. So when you look at, I mentioned the perimeter size of aircraft, oftentimes is limited. It's a smaller airfield. You have three runways at Reagan National. You have the runway one, which runs north and south. It is the busiest runway in the United States. That runway sees 800 takeoffs and landings on a daily basis. That's how often that is used. And that, by all indications, that was the runway that the American Airlines flight 5342 was scheduled to land on. That some point, which is not uncommon due to air traffic and type of aircraft, they were moved to runway 33, which is a shorter runway. To give you some perspective, runway 1 is 7,169 feet long. So that's the biggest runway of the three. Runway 33 is the second longest, and that's a northwest configuration. So it really starts as you come in from the Potomac, and that is 5,204 feet long. And then there's runway 4, which is 5,000 feet. When you look at an aerial view of the runways, they all three intersect. And so it's a very busy airport. It is made even more complicated with the runway configuration. Of course, you know, you're factoring in weather and wind speed and all that as you're choosing which runway to direct a plane. And then, you know, that's something that will be looked at by investigators, I'm sure, when they move to that different runway. Did that change things? When was that request made? Things like that. So kind of getting into the events of that evening, you know, American Airlines Flight 5342 departed Wichita on Wednesday the 29th at 5:38 p.m. Central Time. It was scheduled to depart at 5:18 p.m. I went back and looked at some preceding flights, and a number of them would depart late out of Wichita. And I'm sure that was due, like many other airports, as you have delays building through the day, whether ground stoppages or just delays with weather, or even if there was a mechanical issue that delayed a flight by a significant amount, you know, that just builds through the day. So by the time you get to that flight after 5 o'clock in the central time zone, everything may have been on time, ready to go, but it arrived late due to those considerations. And so that could be the factor. At any rate, the flight 5342 was scheduled to land at 9:03 Eastern time at Ronald Reagan National Airport. So what we know at the time this is being recorded, and it is February 1st, the American Airlines Bombardier CRJ 700, which stands for Canadair Regional Jet, collided with an Army Black Hawk Sikorsky H-60 over the Potomac River just east of the airport at 8:48 p.m. So the American Airlines flight actually would have landed a bit early from its scheduled arrival. You'll also hear PSA, regional airline. PSA is a regional carrier that typically will operate flights that originate in smaller markets, will fly to hubs or larger cities. The regional carriers often have a bit more of a nimble operating structure than the big carriers, so you see those partnerships, and it's oftentimes advantageous to both the regional carrier for many reasons, but also for the large carrier. So you see those partnerships, but it was branded a American Eagle, American Airlines Eagle flight, and it was a regional jet. So, you know, that's what you saw there. The plane has a configuration where it typically will carry about 70 passengers in addition to crew. And that night, there were 60 passengers on the flight. One other thing I want to mention, on yesterday afternoon, the FAA indefinitely closed routes near Reagan National to most helicopter traffic. That's significant because after 9/11, you saw routes open up along the Potomac, where you saw a significant helicopter traffic. And, you know, there has not been an incident involving the Reagan National Airport and a civilian airliner since the early 80s. If you recall, and you may not, but in the early 80s, a flight traveling out of Washington, Air Florida, was the airline. It was wintertime, and it back in those days, you did not have a standard procedure for de-icing, or if there was, the bar was set much higher than it is today. And so there was ice on the wings, and the plane wasn't able to reach elevation and crashed into the 14th Street Bridge. Significant accident, but there hasn't been an accident involving Reagan National since that time. So a significant period of time. At any rate, so when you look at those that lost their lives on Wednesday night, it was 67 people in total. 60 passengers on the plane, two flight attendants, and two pilots. The Black Hawk helicopter, had three occupants, so total of 67. Again, very tragic, and our heart truly does go out to the grieving families impacted by this incident, and it was awful. So I want to pause there and kind of move into the investigation. And I want to be really clear when I make these comments. The National Transportation Safety Board, which you can trace their history all the way back to the Air Commerce Act of 1926. That's how far back that group goes. They are an independent agency, and they're going to take the lead on investigating this accident along with the U.S. military, because a U.S. military helicopter was involved. So they're going to really be looking at every aspect of what happened, and they'll be reporting on that. And we'll see recommendations on what changes should be made to avoid future incidents like this. And to remind everyone, in 1974, not that you remember this, but Congress reestablished that the National Transportation Safety Board remain as a separate entity outside of the Department of Transportation. The reasoning for this was that no federal agency can properly perform investigatory functions unless it's totally separate and independent from any other agency in the United States. So the NTSB, while their chairs are nominated by the president, and their terms are confirmed by Congress. By the Senate. They are a true independent agency. And that's important to understand as they do their job. And the board was set up for that reason specifically. So again, they will investigate. The black boxes have been recovered, two from the CRJ 700. There was a separate voice recorder and a flight data recorder, and those will be analyzed. The NTSB said in a press conference yesterday that there was some water intrusion in one of the boxes, but they didn't view it as a hindrance to collect the data. And then the Black Hawk helicopter actually had one recorder, which was a combination of voice and data, and they will be analyzing that. The goal of the NTSB is to have a preliminary report out within 30 days. They're going to really dig in and look at everything from the recordings, video recordings that we saw from dash cams and different security cameras set up around not only the airport, but other areas, looking at different angles and whatnot. They'll be looking at the black boxes and doing that research and investigation, as well as talking to eyewitnesses and the air traffic controllers that were on duty that night in the Reagan Tower to really build a complete overview of what occurred that night to get answers back. So again, we don't have a repeat of something like this. So I want to take a minute to just kind of level set a few items and a little bit of this will be my opinion, but I think it's important from a closing perspective. It's important to let this investigation play out. I think the media does a good job overall, but it's important, I think, in situations like this, not necessarily to be first with information. If you recall, the first accounts from Wednesday night was there was a small plane that crashed somewhere in the area, but there was no information. As we learn more, we learned about the collision between the Black Hawk helicopter and the regional jet. So it's important to let the investigation unfold, let them do their work, and they're going to release information as it is something that they feel is valid and true and worth sharing with the public, and they will do that as they have in the past as well. The other item I want to mention that I think is important is sometimes terms that are used interchangeably aren't always accurate. In the briefing that was held early morning hours of January 30th, Thursday morning, Senator Jerry Moran talked about how he lobbied American Airlines for that direct route from Wichita to Washington. The next day, I don't know what I was listening to, if it was radio or if it was a TV news report. But the reporter mentioned that Senator Moran lobbied Congress to have American Airlines add this route. That's inaccurate. That is not what occurred. As a United States senator, one of their jobs, if you will, is to be an ambassador to different entities on behalf of Kansas. There was a need, a ask by many to get a direct flight from Wichita to Washington. That wasn't something that, because Senator Moran asked American Airlines to do, they just did it. It was something that they took under consideration, and that all had to be coordinated with the FAA and all kinds of different things. So it's important to understand kind of how that works. And so I just wanted to level set that. It's also important to note Congress did pass the FAA Reauthorization Act of 2024, allowing 10 additional slots at the Washington National Airport. That bill took effect on May 16th of 2024, but it's the job of the FAA to work with airlines for those slots. And that's determined, by a criteria that's been well established. And that was not one of those 10 slots was not part of the grouping of slots that went to American Airlines for the Wichita flight. That had already been in place. The other thing I wanted to mention that air travel is still the safest mode of travel. Things like hearing about the event of last night in Philadelphia and the crash in Washington is heart-wrenching. It truly is. But we have not had a commercial aircraft accident in this country since 2009. It's been 15 years since we've had a crash. There was a Continental Airlines crash outside of Buffalo, New York. And so it's important to understand it's been a long time since we've had that. So it's a very safe mode of travel. By comparison, just to give you some numbers, I went back and I looked from 2023 through 2020. And in this country, we average almost 40,000 auto accidents a year that result in death. 40,000 deaths related to motor vehicle traffic crashes. That's a significant number. When you kind of compare the two of those, it's not even close. Again, I don't want to take anything away from those that lost their life Wednesday night, because it was awful. I have traveled, not from Wichita to Washington, but many times on a regional jet from Kansas City to Washington. I've taken that same route, and it's something that will always be in my mind as I travel to Washington going forward. It you can't help but have it be the case. So I don't want to take anything away from that, but just to put the numbers in perspective, when you're looking at that, I want to end the podcast before I tease the next episode on February 15th. The folks that lost their life on Wednesday night, they were someone's husband or wife, son or daughter, co-worker, friend, cousin, neighbor. These were people who were thinking as they were descending to the airport about dinner plans that night or a meeting they had the next day. It is absolutely gut-wrenching to think about those people that lost their lives, from the Black Hawk helicopter pilots to the folks on the plane, staff that was on the plane. Awful, absolutely awful. And it makes you really want to appreciate every day. It makes you want to hold your loved ones a little tighter and say those words that you might put off saying when someone leaves to go run errands or what have you. Tomorrow is not a guarantee. It's not promised. And so I encourage all of you that are listening, that will listen to this in the future, appreciate what you have, appreciate today, be thankful for today, and don't take it for granted. And I know I won't. And it's unfortunate that it takes events like this to make us think about that, but it truly does. So again, my thoughts and prayers go to those that are grieving, that lost loved ones in that crash Wednesday night in Washington. I appreciate you allowing me to take the time to depart from what I had originally planned on speaking about in this podcast and going through and kind of talking through some of this. I hope that for some of you, it kind of connects some dots. For others, you found it informative. For others, you found it a bit therapeutic and maybe a little bit of all the above. So with that, I'm going to stop there. I do want to tease the next episode. We are going to get back into talking about you've made it through security and you're in the airport. You're getting ready to board your flight. Some things to think about some best practices and some things that I can share. So with that, I want to thank you for tuning in and really appreciate the time. And we will have Mr. Dwight Yoakam take us home. Thank you. She drove south I-95 straight through Kansas.